from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, there are thousands of chemicals and products we use every day, chemicals we know very little about. From cleaning supplies to children's toys and cosmetics, all of us are exposed to potentially harmful substances. Now, a new green chemistry initiative in California aims to reduce the number of hazardous chemicals in our midst. It's a new approach to design and regulation of chemicals that reduces pollution and fosters the creation of safer products with fewer toxic substances. We'll examine that initiative and the health risks it tries to address. Is the idea of green chemistry a potential panacea or just a lot of hype? We'll get started with Forum right after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny, who's nursing a bit of a cold. Well, chances are very good that without even thinking about it, you've already come into contact with dozens, if not hundreds, of chemicals just today already. From cosmetics to shower curtains, car dashboards to cleaning supplies, common consumer products contain more than 80,000 chemicals that are used in manufacturing. And the thing is, we don't even know how exposure to the vast majority of those chemicals affects us. Yesterday, the State Department of Toxic Substances Control released a final report as part of its Green Chemistry Initiative. It includes recommendations for reducing public risk from chemicals and changing the way products are created to make them safer for people and the environment. Green chemistry is our topic this hour. And joining us, Maureen Gorson. She's director of the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. Also with me here in the studio, Dr. Meg Schwartzman. She's a research scientist for the Center for Occupational and Environmental Health at UC Berkeley. Also on the line from Sacramento, John Ulrich, Executive Director of the Chemical Industry Council of California, and also joining us, Bill McGovern, Director of the Sierra Club of California. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Maureen Gorson, let's start with you. This report that was released yesterday, why don't you give us a broad definition of green chemistry? I kind of described it at the top, but what's the goal of green chemistry? What is it?
It's a paradigm shift in how we protect the environment, and it's really looking at how can we influence the design of molecules, of ingredients, of materials, of products, so that at the design phase, they take into account all of the environmental, potential environmental impacts they may have, and really design them to be benign, so that we are not having to regulate and control air and water and other types of pollution later on, or become the long-term stewards of waste created by those products.
So when you say it's a paradigm shift, you mean right now we think about what to do once toxics are exposed to workers, or what do we do with them when we throw them away? How do we recycle them? But you're thinking about, you want to begin thinking about these chemicals at the front end, as you benign by design.
Yeah, I mean, we here at the California Environmental Protection Agency, as well as all environmental agencies, have been implementing laws that were passed in the 70s, and they assumed a cradle-to-grave industrial production system. They assumed that when we're done with things, we're going to throw them out. It assumed that when we make things, that there's air pollution and water pollution, and that the laws are designed to make sure that those byproducts are not harmful to the environment and not harmful to public health, that the risks are minimized and reduced. And so, yeah, we've been busy doing that. And, you know, what I've kind of been saying at DTSC is that we're working in Rapunzel's hair salon. We keep generating more hazardous waste. We don't seem to be getting out of that business at all. And more of these landfills are becoming the long-term stewardship care responsibilities of the state.
Rapunzel's hair salon. I love that. One of the things that stuck out for me in your report was this notion that there are 644 million tons of chemical products sold each day in California, 644 million tons. Is there no disclosure required currently about what's in those products? Because we're not talking about just like a bin of pesticide or a barrel of it. We're talking about shampoos and children's toys and all kinds of things, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Some disclosure requirements. For instance, the governor passed a law a few years ago that required disclosure of ingredients of cosmetics. There are certain warning requirements that Prop 65 requires if certain chemicals are in a product. But by and large, they're ad hoc and haphazard, and they've come about because we've become concerned about one or another chemical. We don't really have that across all products right now.
Meg Schwartzman, you co-authored with your colleague Mike Wilson a report earlier this year on toxics in California. What were the things that concerned you as a physician?
Well, let me describe a little bit sort of how how we recognized the problem at UC Berkeley and what led to that report. We were sort of drawn into it by a dramatic case of 14 auto mechanics that were diagnosed at UCSF who had developed a severe form of permanent nerve damage that was ultimately traced to their use of a hexane-based brake cleaner at their work. And when we looked at how this problem had come about, what we found that was these hexane-based cleaners were actually replacement for chlorinated solvents, which were banned because they produce dioxins. Look into it a little bit further, and we could trace a series of 6 or 7 different substances, each of which had been banned for a very good reason. They were ozone depleters or carcinogens, reproductive toxicants. But what we had wound up doing was substituting one with an equivalent or worse hazard, and that was in a serial way. So this problem of serial substitution was a consequence of the lack that Maureen's describing of a consistent, coordinated mechanism for governing synthetic chemicals. And it left the state in the situation of evaluating and regulating one chemical at a time.
And when you say, I mean, what you're describing there is a workplace hazard, correct?
That one in particular,
yeah.
Although the same applies for a whole variety of consumer products.
Well, and in fact, those are in some ways more insidious, are they not? Because we really don't, you know, when you use a bottle of shampoo or you give your child a teething ring or a toy, you're not thinking there are chemicals in there. Whereas if, you know, if you're working on, you know, in an industrial setting, you might at least might cross your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying with that report is, hey, there are all kinds of dangers that all of us are exposed to, or many of us are exposed to on a daily basis that we're not aware of.
Exactly. And those daily sort of chronic exposures may be less dramatic, but actually very little is known about either case, about workplace hazards or about the daily chronic lower level but potentially cumulative exposures that we all get from the environment, from products. For example, the Department of Toxics found that 72% of California's largest hazardous waste sites are directly leaking into groundwater.
Which, of course, can lead to our drinking water and
exactly.
fish and all kinds of
exactly.
things.
Exactly. So we're really exposed to a wide variety of substances from multiple different sources, and these chemicals are showing up in people. So what we find is hundreds of synthetic chemicals detected in breast milk, detected in umbilical cord blood, and in the majority of children and adults who were screened by the Center for Disease Control.
And how do those chemicals get into our bloodstreams?
Well, we don't know for all of them. For some of them, we're able to trace the source. But for the majority of them, we really don't know. And that's one of the things that we need to be doing a much better job of studying.
We have joining us now on the line from Sacramento, Assemblyman Mike Feuer from Los Angeles. And Assemblyman Feuer, your bill, AB 1879, which the governor signed, became sort of the foundation for some of this green chemistry initiative. What got you into this topic area, and what are you hoping to accomplish with the bill that was signed by the governor and now this report that's come out this week?
Well, thanks very much for allowing me to be on the show with you. I have to say the issue is easy to sound quite technical, but in fact, it has tremendous relevance every day for families across the state. What really inspired me to get involved is a study that many of the world's leading scientists issued about a year and a half ago that indicated that children in the womb are pre-programmed to get cancer and diabetes and other serious illnesses, and that they can never be unprogrammed. And they attributed this problem to the fact that the moms of these kids are exposed to toxics every day. So with that in mind, I've been very pleased to work with the administration and many of the folks on this call, on this show, to figure out how we can develop a comprehensive approach to using science to determine how to attack this problem. And so the legislation, which I've authored, enables us to begin by asking, what does science say are the most dangerous chemicals to which people are exposed every day? What are the alternatives to using those chemicals? And with that in mind, how should the state be regulating those chemicals? And my legislation, for the first time, gives state officials the authority to determine whether to label products, whether to require that producers take back products, and indeed whether to require that certain products, because of the chemicals they contain, be banned altogether.
And before it gets to that point, what kind of disclosure does there have to be by the companies that make these products?
Well, in fact, there are very few strong regulations in the state of California right now regarding disclosure. And one of the strong elements of the Green Chemistry Initiative, on which we're all going to be working, is to start to require that consumers know what's in the products that they're using every day. Until we can give consumers that information, they can't make the right choices.
John Ulrich from the Chemical Industry Council of California. The chemical industry, and I'm not saying your council necessarily, but in general, the industry has fought tooth and nail in Europe, where the EU has recently adopted some of these disclosure and regulation laws throughout Europe. What's your attitude toward what's happening now in California?
Well, Scott, thank you very much. The Chemical Industry Council has been extremely active since sometime in 2006 on this particular issue. We've been very proactive on it. We've been a leading voice in supporting green chemistry and the development of green chemistry. In fact, many of our members are recipients of the President's Green Chemistry Award. We believe that the scientific framework that Assemblyman Feuer just described is an excellent process moving forward for scientific evaluation and the same application of that science to alternatives and substitute products. And within that framework, we see this as a very workable model.
Now, Assemblyman Feuer mentioned a moment ago that the idea of green chemistry is to base some of this regulation and decisions on science. Is that opposed to what, emotion?
Well, I think the activity that we've seen in the course of the last several legislative sessions and escalating is a compound by compound attempt by the legislature to regulate and to identify alternatives. Oftentimes those decisions by their own words are being made by members of the legislature who really have indicated that they don't feel qualified to make those decisions.
What's it based on then?
Well, it's. I think I would defer to Mr. Feuer in that regard. He's in that environment every day.
Well, let me ask you, Assemblyman Feuer, because there is a specific ban that's about to go into effect next month in California. The governor signed a bill to ban six what are called phthalates, which make plastic hard, and it's found in teething rings sometimes and children's toys. And I think six of those phthalates are going to be banned in products for kids starting in January. It makes them softer rather, not harder. And I just wondered, is a law like that not the direction you want the legislature to be going in? Something that fewer. In other words, you're advocating a broader approach rather than a chemical-by-chemical approach?
Well, I think that there are some chemicals, some substances about which we know enough already for us to make the determination that to protect our families, we have to take action now. I would prefer in general to have a broad approach where the Department of Toxic Substance Control scientists begin the process by saying what are the most dangerous chemicals in general. But we do know enough about some chemicals now. And in fact, under my legislation, I anticipate the department is going to move quickly with regard to certain substances about which we have a great deal of information and can't afford to wait. I think that the guiding principle of this initiative needs to be how we protect California families first. But I do want to add, and I really appreciate John Ulrich's comments in general and his teamwork on this initiative as a representative of the chemical industry, because I think there's also something important for economic development here for us to know about, and that is that California can be a leader economically in producing green chemicals. Chemicals that begin to enable us to protect our families and at the same time put California on the cutting edge nationally for the products that we produce and the substances they contain. And that can lead us to be a real engine of economic development, even as we're in the forefront of assuring that our kids are safe.
Assemblyman Mike Feuer from Los Angeles. And Assemblyman, I'm going to let you go. I know you and your colleagues are busy trying to solve California's budget problem, so I appreciate your time this morning.
Oh, it's very important. Thank you for having me.
You bet. We're talking about green chemistry in this first hour of Forum, and our guests include Maureen Gorson, director of the California Department of Toxic Substances Control, also Dr. Meg Schwartzman, a research scientist at UC Berkeley's Center for Occupational and Environmental Health, John Ulrich from the Chemical Industry Council of California, and also on the line with us, Bill McGovern, director of the Sierra Club here in California. And Bill McGovern, I assume that the Sierra Club is very supportive of this initiative, but I'm wondering if you feel that groups like yours had to compromise the things that you gave up in the process of creating this legislation and this initiative.
Well, actually, the legislation enacted earlier this year realizes a goal that we've had for many years, which is to give the experts in California's executive branch the ability to take action against harmful substances in our consumer products, rather than waiting for the legislature to have to deal with each threat as it comes along. That chemical-by-chemical approach in the legislature prevented us from ever getting our arms around the whole problem. And now that we're taking a more comprehensive look, we think that California may actually be able to get ahead of the curve. So we don't see it as compromising at all. In fact, we see it as the fulfillment of a goal that we've had for many years.
John Ulrich, what about your industry? Are there things you had to give up? I know, for example, there's concern about revealing information about what's in products that could be trade secrets, that sort of thing.
Well, the legislation that was passed earlier this year has provision for trade secrets in it. I would concur with Bill McGovern's comments regarding the fact that we have long sought to have scientists evaluate these compounds and help us make those decisions. We see in the development of the rules which will follow, an opportunity for California to have a process that will be a leading process that will provide excellent scientific outcomes. We're pleased with that, and we compliment all of the participants, particularly Director Gorson and her staff, for the absolute transparent process that she maintained throughout the development of the Green Chemistry Initiative and leading on to the legislation. The bipartisanship of the legislature, Mr. Feuer, who was joining us earlier, Mr. Simidian, Assemblyman Blakeslee, were just excellent in terms of their work and the governor's office for their leadership. Some truly excellent work, and I was pleased to have the opportunity to actually make calls with my colleague Bill McGovern in joining arms to support this legislation.
Maureen Gorson, as I mentioned earlier, the European Union is what some people would say is really ahead of the United States in terms of identifying and regulating and banning a lot of these toxic substances in products. Is this initiative, this Green Chemistry Initiative, seen as a way to mirror what's happening in other parts of the world, in particular Europe and perhaps Canada?
You know, I don't think it's a mirror. I think it's we are standing on their shoulders and going to the next level. Because what Canada and EAREACH have done is they have done a yeoman's work of now getting information from manufacturers of chemicals, starting to catalog that information about toxicity across a number of endpoints, not just reproductive toxins and carcinogens, but like Mike Feuer was talking about, epigenetic effects that affect future generations, aquatic toxicity. There's a whole host of hazard traits that they are getting information from manufacturers of chemicals in their jurisdictions, and we're not going to be duplicating that. We're going to be building on that information, because what the Green Chemistry Initiative does is it creates capacity in California. It creates that information accessibility in a Web 2.0 environment, and then it creates tools to quickly assess and compare different ingredients in products to pick which is safer.
And who's going to...
Yes, I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but how does that comparison happen? In other words, when you bring it down to the consumer level, mm-hmm. you go into a store, how is a consumer going to know, if all this works the way you say, which product, if they're looking at two shampoos or two mm-hmm. cleaning fluids, I mean, how are they going to know? What's the criteria, and how are they going to mm-hmm. easily tell?
Yes, well, that's key, because right now everybody wants to buy green products. And green marketing of products is everywhere. And a lot of people are very concerned about greenwashing. And what our tools would do
is... Let me just stop you. Greenwashing meaning making a claim that isn't really necessarily true.
Well, they're saying this product is green, right? This product is green. And it's green because... And they'll tell you one particular thing they did that's different than their competitors that makes it green. But what we're trying to do is create metrics of green. How do you know? For instance, when you go to a car dealership now... they have on the window miles per gallon. So you can tell how energy efficient that car is because you can compare. The Air Board just started using life cycle analysis to put carbon footprint labels on cars. So now, in addition to seeing how many miles per gallon the car has, you can also see how much CO2 was created to make that car. Not just how much you will create when you use that car, like a mile per gallon, but from the raw material use, the actual industrial making of that car, the use of that car, and the ultimate disposal of that car, what will be the carbon footprint. We're taking that kind of life cycle metric, looking at the environmental footprint over the entire life cycle of making a product and giving it metrics that are easy to discern, not only for consumers, but for everyone along the supply chain. You talk to a lot of people, businesses in California, and they are sourcing their raw materials and their intermediary products as well as finished products from around the globe, and they don't know what's in the stuff they're selling or what's in the stuff they're buying. So to create that visibility and create a standard set of metrics, environmental footprint, life cycle-based, green chemistry-based, on our entire consumer product economy is going to enable us to quickly accelerate to greener choices.
So do you foresee, for example, down the road, a single number, a rating from 1 to 100 or 1 to 10, something like that?
It could be. You know, I don't know how the metric will actually visually manifest itself in the end, right, because we're creating something new. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of ideas. There'll be color ideas. There'll be number ideas. There'll be, you know, graphic ideas. And, you know, what we're saying is that this is what California needs to start doing. We need to start establishing the infrastructure and systems and standards and protocols and start setting target dates for the development of this across all product categories.
Dr. Schwartzman, we're going to take a break in just about a minute. But what benefits do you see to consumers' health from this kind of initiative?
It remains to be seen exactly what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, the effects of we see acute effects from, for example, the occupational exposures we talked about. But in terms of the more chronic effects, they are single elements of diseases that have multiple causes. And although they're linked, these chronic exposures to multiple chemicals are linked to many health effects that we're seeing rise in incidence. It's not the kind of thing where overnight we're going to see everybody living longer. But it is essential to make this change.
All right. We have lots more to talk about, and we'd like you to join us here on Forum. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments to forum@kqed.org. forum@kqed.org. Lots more to talk about. Green chemistry, our topic this hour on Forum. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny, who is a bit under the weather. We're talking in our first hour about green chemistry, this initiative in California to change the way we think about toxic substances that are in products that are manufactured and sold here in California. Our guests are Maureen Gorson, Director of the Department of Toxic Substance Control here in California. Also, Dr. Meg Schwartzman from the UC Berkeley Center for Occupational and Environmental Health. John Ulrich is on the line from Sacramento. He's with with the Chemical Industry Council of California, and also Bill McGavern, director of the Sierra Club here in California. Let's go right to the phones now. Meg is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Meg.
Hi. I had a question. One of the panelists had alluded to workplace exposure. And, I'm a frequent user of nail salons, and I was curious how the Green Chemistry effort was going to help out the nail salon workers that are exposed to all those chemicals. When you go in there, there's such strong smells, and you know, I know I've had heard that they have a lot of health problems. So, again, wondering how the Green Chemistry effort will address or help them.
Good question. Let's go from Meg's question to Meg Schwartzman, another Meg. What do you think? Is there something in particular in this initiative that would, you know, affect nail salons? Or because there has been regulation of nail salons already, hasn't there?
Yeah, exactly. I think there has been some specific regulations that are some initiatives in San Francisco in particular, and I don't know the details of those, but that are looking at this issue. But it does, it addresses both workplace problems and common just everyday exposures. And there are a lot of substances that we would be concerned about in those kinds of personal care products. And this brings up the two-pronged approach, really, of the Green Chemistry Initiative, which is identifying some substances of concern that need immediate action, and then also saying, let's take a catalog of what the ingredients in these substances are and try to set priorities.
Maureen Gorson, wouldn't that issue that the caller raises be kind of a already fall under Cal EPA in terms of a workplace hazard?
Believe it or not, Cal EPA doesn't do Cal OSHA, workplace occupation. We are mostly focused on outside, or at least historically, Cal EPA has been focused on outside, the air, the water, the land, and a little less so on public health, which we have other agencies, Department of Public Health and Cal OSHA. But certainly with the Green Chemistry Initiative, one of the paradigm shifts is that we're not going to just be looking at single media in the environment, but we're going to be looking overall the multimedia health and environmental impacts of substances that are in our products. So whereas we were previously looking at emissions coming out of factories located in California and impacting the air and the water, now we're going to be looking at products, their ingredients, and how they might be affecting our environment. So with the substances in the nail salon, we could see that if one of those became a concern, it would go through the regs, and we might start identifying safer substitutes to that.
Meg, does that answer your question? Meg, you with us? Well, I think she's gone away. Well, let's go to the next call, Ron in San Francisco. Hi, Ron. Welcome to Forum.
Hi. I've been working for about two decades with Global Garden Projects Hope and Beyond out of San Francisco, focusing on a specific issue. So the issue is what the body burdening, the fatty tissue storing of toxic substances over long and short term, which have an effect on the immune system, cancer-causing, opportunistic disease influences. What's being done about the reduction of the chemicals in the human body?
Hmm. Meg Schwartzman, you want to take a crack at that one?
Yeah, sure. Well, that is, it's an important issue that you've identified, and it's one of the major motivating factors behind some of the international and the California efforts. The issue that you identify about substances that last a long time, both in the environment and that accumulate in human and in wildlife tissues, raises the issue of taking preventive action. Because, in fact, these substances that last for so long, we can't know at this point often what the ultimate effects are going to be. But we know that they are important because, for exactly the point you make, that they last for so long.
Extraction is the issue.
What do you mean by that?
I mean the capability through the biotechnology to research to extract the chemicals from the human fatty tissue.
There's actually no methods for doing that. One thing, interestingly, is looking at the persistent chemicals that accumulate in fat in breast milk. The one way that there is currently of humans to lower their body burden of chemicals is to breastfeed. Now, that's very bleak in terms of an outlook of what we're doing. Still, it's important to note that breastfeeding is by far the best food for infants. And yet it's a serious concern that that's our one way of lowering our body burden. As of now, there's no other way to address that.
All right, Ron, thanks for the call. Let's go to Woodside now. Stephanie is joining us. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. I had a question for your experts, and that is there a place locally in the Bay Area where we can get material, particularly textiles, tested to see exactly what chemicals are in them? I have a reusable bag company, and our product is manufactured in China, and we do everything to make sure that the product is as green as it possibly can be. But all textiles are manufactured pretty much in China, and I would love to actually get a chemical analysis of specifically what's in the dyes. You know, we test them for their functionality. Are they strong? Do they feel good? But we have no way to chemically test them.
I know there are labs that do that kind of analysis in the Bay Area, although I couldn't tell you the names of any. Maureen Gorson, do you happen to know, or where could you send Stephanie to find out?
Well, we have a lab in Berkeley, and that's precisely what we do. We test a variety of consumer products, and I think if we got a contact information, either our lab or we can identify another lab for the caller. I did want to address one aspect of what the previous caller, Ron, said.
Sure.
Which is that two years ago, the governor signed a really groundbreaking biomonitoring bill. And so that's a precursor to this Green Chemistry Initiative. And California will be the first state in the nation to sample the body tissues of 2,000 Californians to get a representative sample of exactly what is the body burden in California. And so that information that we gather is going to help us prioritize what do we need to be concerned about, what is accumulating in people's bodies.
And so the state is testing Californians on a sample of Californians right now?
Well, right now they're designing the test. There's a methodology there's a science panel, and they're designing the test. But within the next few years, yeah, we should have biomonitoring of a good sample size of the California population. And our department for 20 years has been doing studies on breast milk, on peregrine falcon eggs, and looking at different chemicals of concern and where they're accumulating in the ecosystem.
Okay, before we let Stephanie go, is there a website that you can refer her to or a phone number?
Yeah, dtsc.ca.gov is our website, and there's lots of contact information there, and she can send an email, and we'll send her to the lab.
dtsc.ca.gov?
Correct.
All right. Stephanie, thanks for the call.
Thanks for your help.
All right. Good luck. Yeah, her call brings up the question. She was talking about products made in China. Maureen Gorson, is this going to cover all products made everywhere, and how do you ensure that a company, a factory that's making things in another country is really complying and telling the truth, basically, because it's a self-reporting mechanism, isn't it?
Yes, and that is another one of the very, very different things about the Green Chemistry Initiative than any of our existing statutory authorities is that, for the first time, we are going to have environmental regulatory authority over products sold in California. Doesn't matter where it's made.
But how do you go about determining whether information sent to you from a company in Thailand or Indonesia or China is accurate?
Yes, well, somebody in California is importing it, right? Somebody in California is selling it. And so as we start imposing a disclosure and footprint and life cycle and different requirements, those are the people we will be holding accountable, since they're bringing it into California.
Yeah.
And so what we're anticipating is through the contracts in the supply chain, and we already have this. We've already had bans on lead in jewelry, lead in candy that's coming from Mexico, lead in Coke bottles that come from Mexico. And the person who is selling them in California becomes responsible for making sure whatever they're importing meets our requirements.
All right, the number to call if you want to join our conversation this morning, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Bill McGovern, there's been a lot of talk. The focus, it seems, of environmental questions in the last few months has really been energy and energy independence. What connection do you see to that and this topic, this initiative of green chemistry?
Well, one connection is Director Gorson was talking about the importance of doing a life cycle analysis, and doing that kind of analysis will let people see the different environmental impacts that are caused by a particular product. So you could see how much energy is used and what are the impacts on our air and water and climate of that energy production, and you could also look at could this substance possibly have toxic effects on the human body. So the Sierra Club's founder, John Muir, did say that When you pick up anything in the universe, you find that it's connected to everything else. And I'm encouraged by the fact that Cal EPA is taking this more holistic multimedia approach to environmental protection.
And John Ulrich, the chemical industry in the past has, as I said earlier, fought these kinds of initiatives. But I'm wondering if you see now an opportunity, perhaps, for companies to use this information as a marketing advantage over products made, say, in other countries that are, you know, less green.
Well, Scott, I've been in the industry for 40 years, and I've seen an awful lot of change throughout that time in terms of the evolution of the industry and whatnot. And there are always leading companies, and there are some that are further behind. The leading companies are always looking for advantage. They're always looking for new products and new markets and new opportunity. Mr. Fuhrer mentioned earlier the jobs and the new opportunity, and I think what we're seeing and have been developing over the last 20 years is this concept of sustainability. And one of the figures within the report talks about how green chemistry fits into life cycle thinking, which Bill McGovern just spoke of, and then the total concept of sustainability, which basically is the environment, society, and the economy. And so when you look at all three of those concepts working functioning together, what happens is that you do have these opportunities that spring from what appears to be a regulatory activity that could be a burden on some. And so it's not a monolithic system, and I think what we're looking for is balance, and balance is always the key here. And what we've got in this set of regulations and proposals right now, I think, is a balanced approach. And so those that are on the leading edge and are looking for opportunity will find it. On the same score, we can't do it overnight. We're in a transition, and this is going to take some time. And so I think we need to be able to give it the time to work. This is a framework. It's not a final product. And as I've said on a number of occasions, green chemistry is a journey. It's not a destination. It's like continuous improvement. There's always one more thing that you can do to make it better.
Well, let's go to the phones now. Brooke is on the line from Monticello, New York, and I think has a question relevant to what you were just saying, John Ulrich. Brooke, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks very much. I wanted to mention that I feel like there's a huge community of people that are being hugely affected by this, and that is the small businesses, the American artisans, the handcrafters, the people who are really, I know for me and my family, when I found out about the toxicity issues going on and the not being disclosed and not being able to trust what I was reading on labels, I went to small artisan-crafted soaps and clothing and handmade, you know, items that I could feel I was trusting the source. And these people, a lot of them are having to go out of business because of the regulations, because of the liability issues. I feel like maybe there certain needs to be, we need to embrace a certain aspect of buyer beware here and not lay it all on the manufacturers.
Maureen Gerson, what about that? And she brings up the question of lawsuits, which I know is a concern of companies, especially here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, though, that, you know, in California, you know, the practices that we have, because we have 40 years of environmental regulation, that the practices small businesses, medium businesses, large businesses have are by and large significantly cleaner due to our stricter environmental regulatory requirements than elsewhere. And if we were to have metrics of green, metrics of environmental footprints, right now consumers make choices between products based on price. We don't have a system like we have with cars where they can make choices of their car based on miles per gallon or the carbon footprint. But I think that will give California manufacturers of every size a competitive advantage once consumers can see, and even the intermediary suppliers can see, how much greener California products are than other products.
And what about, to Brooke's point, about hurting small businesses, artisans, for example, who work with all kinds of materials that could be, you know, regulated or targeted by this kind of initiative?
Well, I mean, we're going to be looking at alternatives analysis. So when we're, say it's a product in a nail salon or a product in maybe a kiln, what is the safer alternative? And I think it really benefits small artisans, because if we're stimulating the development or the substitution of a safer alternative, that affects their health and their business, and it reduces their liability long term. I mean, if they continue to work with toxic products and those toxic products end up in a landfill later, 50 years from now, when people are looking for who should pay the cost of this landfill, that's when their liability attached. Or who's going to pay the cost of the harm caused by their product, that's when the liability attached. So if they can move to safer substances, then they remove any chance of liability whatsoever.
All right, Brooke, thanks for the call. I've got an email here from Stephanie who writes, how can we know what chemicals are in products if the law allows businesses to hide that information under the guise of business secrets? Maureen Gorson? Did we lose Maureen? It sounds like we lost Maureen. Meg Schwartzman, I know you're a physician, maybe not your area, but how concerned are you about that exemption? You know, there are previous laws aimed at regulating bills at toxics have had all kinds of loopholes. How concerned are you that that might be a loophole in this initiative?
I think it is one of the key issues, and certainly California is considering this. It's been a major barrier to understanding what the potential impact is of products or of manufacturing processes and wastes that are generated. It's a lot of times we don't even know the identity. And there's a balance to be struck, just as John Ulrich says, between protecting proprietary information that really is key to innovation and providing enough information so that we can make informed choices. And I think one of the keys to implementing the Green Chemistry Initiative will be to actually make a change from how the current Toxic Substances Control Act at the U.S. federal level treats trade secrets. And we would recommend that actually companies be required to justify upfront a claim of a trade secret, and that those claims be reviewed on a regular basis.
Here's a comment from Kristen in Berkeley who writes, long ago I realized that if you could smell a chemical, it was entering your body. For this reason, I avoided and taught my kids to avoid the aisles in home improvement and hardware stores where the pesticides, fertilizers, and so on are stored. Is there any effort underway to enclose these products or at least provide guidance to the mom-and-pop hardware stores to reduce the possibility of consumers inhaling them, not to mention the workers? Is that any part of this initiative, Meg Schwartzman?
There's nothing that I know that involves that. Certainly, OSHA takes on the issue of permissible workplace exposure limits for chemicals, and that would partly cover this kind of thing because there are workers in those settings. But for the majority of chemicals, there's no limit. There's no regulatory guidelines about what is a permissible exposure level. And so no one's monitoring it.
Maureen Gerson, I think we have you back now. Anything to add to that?
No, I think Meg has that right. But I think, you know, we just got these new statutory authorities and we've just put out this.
Why haven't you fixed everything already?
Yes, exactly. And so we're now developing the regs. And so we don't know where this is going to lead us and where the concerns are the greatest.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. David is on the line. David, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, greetings. Yeah, I told your screener I was interested in the idea of getting an honest cleanup. And I would definitely like to stay on that. And just as a side note, for about a dozen years, I studied personal injury cases. And a big standard in personal injury cases is that if you're guilty of pollution or some crime, you know, some injury to another person, it's you either settle early or you have to deny it as long as possible, and ideally the other person has to die, and then you're going to pay their heirs 10% of what their value was. And so if you look at the hazardous waste cleanups and you look at the problem that the nation is in, we've got externalized costs forever. You know, for example, our Medicare costs have risen because these cancer cases aren't being paid for by the polluters. You know, the ozone layer going, we're having blindness emerge.
David, I want to interrupt you because we are short on time. Did you have a question you wanted to pose?
Yeah, well, if the universities have been kind of bought and sold by the polluters, how do we make sure that there are honest cleanup efforts? For example, MTBE was touted as an honest cleanup by the polluters who were trying to get rid of a hazardous waste. These guys are saying that it's not cost effective to save our lives. They're putting us on a budgetary stranglehold where they can poison us, but when we ask for them to pay their medical bills, they refuse to do it based upon the ideas that it's going to be too expensive.
Okay, well, let's put that maybe to Bill McGovern. Do you want to comment on that, Bill?
Yeah, it's important to have accountability so that polluters should have to pay for the messes that they cause. And it's also important that we have the kind of initiative that we're seeing in green chemistry, that we prevent pollution before it starts, because the caller is bringing attention to the fact that once you create a toxic mess, there aren't really any good solutions. The best you can do is mitigate the hazards and do an expensive cleanup. And we need to be able to take action before people are getting sick and dying because of these toxic exposures.
Here's an email from Mark who writes, as a consumer, I don't have the time to sort through some life cycle scoring system. I want to know if this green chemistry initiative will give the state the authority to prohibit the use of chemicals in products if they suspect that those chemicals will harm the public or the environment. That's what I want my government to do to protect my family and me. Maureen Gorson, it sounds like what you said earlier, that authority will exist or does exist.
Yes, absolutely. We will have the authority to take a whole host of actions, including bans, prohibitions, restrictions, substitutions.
So it's not either or. I mean, No.
And it's really, what are we concerned about? If we are concerned about the use of a chemical that's impacting people, that's a different category of problem than if we're concerned that, hey, it's perfectly great when you use it, but when you throw it out, it could get into the groundwater. The solution for that would be different. So.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. I didn't mean to catch up. Let's try to squeeze in another call here. Maria is on the line from Napa. Hi, Maria.
Hi, I'm a physician. I like to think that I'm reasonably a careful consumer. But recently, I have a question specifically about children's products, baby products. I purchased something for my son with a Disney label on it, unfortunately, and which said hypoallergenic, extra gentle on your baby. And within like 2 minutes of placing my son into this bubble bath solution, he broke into enormous hives. I compared it to other products they used to use and found DMDM hydantoin in it, which I later found out was formalin, the formaldehyde. So I very angrily called the company, which took forever for me to find some MZB solutions or something like that. And turned out, you know, they felt that this was a safe levels of formalin, even in baby products. They said that they do write in small print on the back of their bottles that it may cause severe irritation in the urethra or et cetera. And my question is there going to be any initiative to stop the use of such toxic chemicals, basically, and even baby products, which especially ones labeled hypoallergenic, extra safe for your baby?
Meg Schwartzman?
Well, I think the caller raises an important issue of labeling, and Director Gorson has said a lot about the Green Chemistry Initiative's plans to address those issues. But it also raises the issue of whether there is any safe exposure threshold to some of these substances. And we see that as a major issue in endocrine-disrupting chemicals, which are a large subset of some of the more hazardous substances that are used. And the nature of how endocrine-disrupting chemicals act is that they're very potent at very, very low levels. And so this raises issues for the way we make policies, which right now have basically been based on the premise that there is a safe exposure threshold. And when we see substances that are found at very low levels and that can scramble the message of the chemical messengers in the body, it starts to raise the issue that there is no safe level of exposure, and we need to address that in our policies.
And so this initiative is a step in that direction.
It is.
Okay. All right, Maria, good luck with your son, and thanks for the call. Maybe we can squeeze in one more call here. Pat is on the line. Pat in Walnut Creek, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody for this Green Chemistry Initiative. It sounds fabulous. In my 50-some years of living, I have been chemically sensitive to petroleum products. And my mother thinks, she was a nurse, so maybe she diagnosed it correctly, was exposure to a leaky gas stove and a leaky gas dryer in the home. So at 12, when we got the new house, it was all electric. But maybe, since you referred to this earlier, it was the fact that my father was a nuclear chemist at Livermore. And maybe he passes on some toxic burden to his children through his contribution. I don't know. But I was also just wanting to comment that the allergic can be perhaps canaries in the chemical world coal mine, because my mother was concerned with feather pillows and things like that. And, of course, what her children were exposed to, all four of us, in Livermore was polyester pillows and polyester clothing, which made my skin crawl, and detergents with petroleum products, which makes my hands fall apart.
We're short on time, Pat. I don't want to don't mean to cut you off. But Maureen Gorson, we've had a lot of calls this morning, including Pat's, talking about sort of personal experience with allergies and that kind of thing. How has the public been involved in telling these kinds of stories to legislators and regulators?
Well, it's hard for them to participate in the legislative process because it goes so quickly and there's only so much capacity. And one of the really innovative parts of this is that we are doing this online in a Web 2.0 environment, kind of like Facebook. I mean, everybody, we had 57,000 hits on our Green Chemistry Initiative so that we could learn a lot of these stories and figure out how are we really going to make a difference in the public health and environment of Californians.
All right. Quick question to you, Bill McGovern. We're really short on time, but we've talked about holding companies accountable. How are you going to hold the government accountable to make sure that all of these great things actually get put into place?
Well, that's a great question, because the Green Chemistry Report has got a lot of good ideas, and those ideas now need to be translated into standards. We need tough regulation and tough and fair enforcement of those standards, because simply asking companies to do the right thing voluntarily is not enough.
All right, and much more to come on this in the coming months and years, I think. Bill McGovern, Director of the Sierra Club, thanks so much for joining us this hour. Thanks also to Maureen Gorson from the Department of Toxic Substances Control, Dr. Meg Schwartzman from UC Berkeley, John Ulrich from the Chemical Industry Council of California, and earlier in the hour, Mike Feuer, Assemblyman from Los Angeles. I want to mention that we're going to have much more on this topic tomorrow night on Health Dialogues here on KQED. You can tune in starting at 8 o'clock. Forum's producers are Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. The program's engineer today is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.